I don't care about the result most of the time because that's not in my control.
My guest coming up is a famous social media influencer.
I feel that artists get taken advantage of a lot when it comes to the world of business. That's why you hear the whole starving artist, because at least back in the days when an artist made money is actually after they passed.
He's a comedy genius. He's a kind man.
Every second that I'm not spending studying the great comedians, studying the great artists, studying the great entertainers means that I'm not getting better at my craft.
He's someone that has influenced so many people and inspired so many people to get up and feel better about themselves.
First of all, we don't work with brands that are controversial. That's one non-negotiable.
It's none other than Khalid Al-Ameri.
At the end of the day, it's weird for me if a company wants to come and work with me and somewhat try to change our creative approach. It doesn't make sense to me at all. So for me, 9 times out of 10 that we walk away.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the podcast in partnership with the Megaverse. We're here at the Sharjah Entrepreneur Festival 2024. My guest coming up is a famous social media influencer, but he's so much more than that. He's a comedy genius, he's a kind man, and is someone that has influenced so many people and inspired so many people to get up and feel better about themselves. It's none other than Khalid Al-Ameri. Now, if you haven't followed him before, you must be sleeping under a rock, because he's got 15 million subscribers, and he and his wife Salama have been for the last 6 or 7 years producing hilarious content, inspiring us all, making us feel good about ourselves, and understanding the cultural differences that exist here in the UAE and in the Middle East for that matter, compared to what it's like in other parts of the world. I know you're going to enjoy this, so tune in for a great interview with the awesome Khalid Al-Ameri. So, I'm not quite sure how to produce this piece of content for you, but I've just finished an interview with Khalid Al-Ameri, and it wasn't anything like I was expecting. The guy behind the character, the real man behind it, the struggles that he's been through, the challenges, the fears that he has that we all experience, the self-sabotage and the imposter syndrome that so many of us go through are part of Khalid's life too. And the fact that he talks so beautifully about some of the challenges he's faced in his life, so beautifully about his family, and the way he just ended that podcast, because I don't really know what to say, but it really moved me.
Megaverse, the digital frontier of tomorrow. Megaverse stands at the cutting edge intersection of technology and imagination. It's a virtual realm where the limitless expanse of the digital universe unfolds, offering users unparalleled experiences and interactions. With its advanced metaverse platform, users can craft unique avatars, forge connections, and even establish their own digital estates. It's more than just virtual reality. Megaverse is an expansive digital civilization teeming with opportunities for both individuals and brands. From immersive concerts to revolutionary retail experiences, Megaverse is redefining the way we engage with the digital world. As we stand on the brink of a new era where the lines between our physical reality and the digital realm blur, Megaverse is poised to lead the charge in this brave new world. Dive in and discover a universe without bounds. This really is the future.
Well, let's talk about your career, because I think it's quite interesting how this kind of stuff goes into our career and our kind of like our priorities in life. Mm. You've built this hugely successful social media business. I mean, literally have us in tears. My parents in Cyprus love your stuff. My kids love your stuff. I mean, you seem to kind of protrude everybody from different parts of the world and different parts of life. So you're doing a really epic job there.
Thank you.
And you know, and it doesn't change. It's still fun. And I kind of like laugh along a little bit, and I'm like, oh, what a donut. Because I know what making content's like as well.
Yeah.
And so I know that the drama that goes with it, and the retakes, and the thinking of the ideas and all this kind of stuff. It's not easy.
No.
People see this 1 minute, this 2 minute, this 30 seconds. Okay. My favorite one recently is you. With the guy, and you're ordering food just with hand signals.
Oh yeah.
Love it.
Thank you so much.
But I know what that was like to film. It was that didn't go just da 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 da. Let's do this. The dedication, the commitment, the focus, the team all being aligned and understanding, all working in the same direction, is a lot of responsibility. So you put that focus into it. Are you the kind of guy that puts that energy into something and lets other things slip?
No.
Or do you have like strong discipline around everything when you're disciplined?
Strong discipline around everything. Like I don't care about the result most of the time because that's not in my control. I can't control what the audience, the algorithm, whatever it is that you want to, but what I can control is the excellence that we had during that entire process. And you know, one person, you know, I think it was Ammar from Yesterday. He's a friend of mine. He's part of a big channel called Yesterday on YouTube. And he said, usually when things don't work out, something went wrong in the process. So if the video didn't do good, it's usually something went wrong in either the planning of the video, the editing of the video, the scripting. Something went wrong there. So you need to actually go back and look at that. If the video didn't perform, you know, everyone likes to blame some external factor. Algorithm. And Mr. Beast said this, replace algorithm with audience. If the audience likes it, the algorithm pushes it. It's that simple. So for me, I am highly disciplined in the way that we work, in ensuring that we are prepared, ensuring that we've planned, ensuring that we've really thought about the idea and how to execute it before anything else happens. And the thing that I think sets us apart is we ask ourselves one critical question before we come up with any idea. And we don't think about how many views is this going to get? Is it funny? Is it whatever? We ask one question. One question, Spencer. Why would someone share this piece of content? And I think by asking that question, we give our content the best chance of it being globally accepted, regardless of your culture, you know, what you believe in, what demographic you are. You're going to watch that content. You're going to, yo, man, that happens to me, man. Let me share this with my friends, my family, my wife, see what you do to me. So that's what we think about. And for me, once we've asked that question, be like, okay, now that we've asked that question, how can we be excellent at everything that we do? Because if we've got that pursuit of excellence in everything from the scripting to the planning to thinking about the props and everything that goes into that idea, 9 times out of 10, the results work for themselves. And one of the things that we always do, it annoys the hell out of us, is once we've finished the idea and it's ready, we also ask another question. How could this be better? But like, yo man, we just spent all this time planning, we're ready to go. They're like, hold on. And usually, if you think about that question, Spencer, that's that, you know, when you're tired and you're done, that's that one extra rep. That's that one or two extra reps that just push you over that average to excellence. So for me, it's that process has sort of worked for me. And for me, like, I never want to film a video and then think we could have done better or we dropped the ball at so many places and we just tried to post for the sake of posting. So discipline, excellence, and we let the rest take care of itself.
We're here at the Entrepreneur Festival. Okay, you've done a talk here this afternoon that I've listened to. We're creators, okay? So we're creator artists. Okay, and let's call them that because I think that's a bit more exotic than creators. It's creators, we're artists, artistic types of people, which I'm
with
full admiration and respect for.
Public son.
Not typically great business people. Okay, because they're artists, you know, that you'll often find, and I had a meeting with a lady yesterday that has a wonderful product. And she's like, I need to find a way to sell more of this. And I looked at the product and I'm like, do you know, this product's beautiful. But she hadn't worked out the commercial aspect of how she made that product into something valuable as a business. She goes, yeah. And I'm like, well, have you done this? No. Have you done this? No. Well, what about that? Well, I've thought about that, but I just want someone to help me do it. And I'm like, but it's your business. Any other shareholders? No. I'm like, hun, your product's great, but come on, you've got to be commercial about it. And in that moment, I just realized she was so passionate about this product. It was her thing. And she'd spent heart and soul creating it. And it was good because she had no way of taking that and turning that into a business. When you think about yourself, your background, your history, you've got great education, you've been to some great universities, you've got an MBA. So you've been full of this education to become a professional something. What do you consider yourself as? Are you an artist? Are you an entrepreneur? Are you an operator? Where do you fit in?
Yeah, I'm an artist, 100%. And even in the MBA that I was doing, they separate you into two categories in the MBA, either a quant or a poet. So the quants are the people that are more quantitative, that are more analytical, that are more linear thinkers. And then you have the poets who are, you know, as per the namesake, you're just an artist, you know. And for me, I fall into that poet category deep. Like, I resonate with whatever she was saying. And, you know, to be honest, if I was first starting in my career, I'd probably sound exactly the same as her. Like, you'd be sitting there be going, I'm baffled, man. This guy makes great videos, but he did it for free. And he actually paid them, you know, it just gets weird. And, you know, one thing I realized is, you know, even though I've done an MBA, Spencer, I do not enjoy the business. I do not enjoy negotiating. I do not enjoy, you know, the financial matters, contracts, legal stuff. I enjoy making the art. I want to be the best entertainer that I can be. And I found that, you know, obviously Nasser's in the room with us. He's one of the most incredible business minds, one of the most shrewd negotiators, you know. And for me, that's what you want in a business person as an artist, because I feel that artists get taken advantage of a lot when it comes to the world of business, you know, underpaid. That's why you hear the whole starving artist, because they only really make money when, you know, at least back in the days when an artist made money is actually after they passed. Mm-hmm. So how do you make money now, right? How do I get people to value me for who I am now? If I'm not good at it, then you need to sort of find the right people to surround yourself with at that time to be able to grow and to be able to make a living doing it. And now it might not always be finding a partner. Maybe it'd be signing to an agency. Maybe it'll be having someone join and take equity in it. You know, there's different solutions that you can. But for me, if someone's in that position, you know, you have to be able to self-reflect and realize either I'm not good at it or I don't enjoy it. Either one, which is not going to work to your advantage when you're across there negotiating with someone who is good at it, who is passionate about business and about negotiating about that stuff. So for me, you know, at this stage, I wake up in the morning and I consume the stand-up comedies of like the 80s and 70s. I watch Mr. Bean. I just try and get inspiration and put like as much brain power into becoming the best artist I can be. And I sit down and I think about awkward situations that have happened in my life. I think about things that are relatable to people around the world. And then I write and I come up with the best ideas that I can. He gets them in his inbox and he sells them.
So all the ideas come from you?
Yes.
That literally is, you get your inspiration from consuming other types of stuff to give yourself the idea. You put your twist spin idea into it and create something there.
Yeah, I'm always consuming. Like if you're, like I said, I was talking about being an athlete. I think the best athletes are the ones that study the game, that study the other incredible athletes that came before them. For me, I want to study the great creators. I want to study the great stand-up comedians. I study Mr. Bean, like, because for me, if you looked at that, the cafeteria video that you were talking about, there was no dialogue.
No.
So it was all there. And Mr. Bean, like, I first of all, Rowan Atkinson to me is like, he's up there for me, and he was like a sort of inspiration for me to like go to a good university and use that good education to become the best entertainer. You know, Rowan Atkinson went to Oxford. And he's a genius. So for me, like, at least in this part of the world, when we think about geniuses, we always think, okay, a genius is an academic genius, is an engineer, is a doctor. But for me, you know, entertainers are geniuses too. And Mr. Bean falls into that category very much so, because he was able to entertain the world without saying a word. And for me, like, when you ask, and people think he did like 50 episodes. He's only did like, it was like 8 or 12 episodes or something like that. But yeah, it wasn't that many, but incredibly shareable. And like everyone, because there's no language. So for me, I was like, I would watch Mr. Bean. I've always wanted to do a Mr. Bean style video. So that's when I did that video. And so for me, I'm always studying the greats. And I believe that should be my responsibility. Because if every second that I'm not spending studying the great comedians, studying the great artists, studying the great entertainers, means that I'm not getting better at my craft. And if I don't get better at my craft, then Nasser has a struggle growing the business because I'm not getting better. So for me, artist through and through, and I do not want to be anything else.
Okay, a couple of points on that. First of all, yes, Mr. Bean. We had somebody before Mr. Bean called Benny Hill. Mm. And Benny Hill was a similar type of comedian. Now, my wife is from Uzbekistan. She's Armenian. Mm. And I was sat with her parents one evening talking, what TV did you watch from Europe? And she said, that French TV, French movies, this kind of stuff. But there was a guy called Benny Hill, and he was amazing. And he was a comedian that had a very similar vein. It was kind of like, I'm not going to talk. You're gonna laugh because of the actions.
Yeah.
When I think about that place that you're in, it's like someone really truly understanding themselves and being really honest with themselves and putting their hands up and go, I'm not good at that stuff. I've got two choices. I either get good at it or I find someone to be good at it.
Mm.
Okay. If I do it myself, it's probably going to take me a lot longer because I'm not good at it and it's going to be laborious and not much fun. Then we come back to the art. When you run out of ideas, how does that get to that place with this is a business, your creativity is essential for the business to keep flourishing.
Yeah.
I consume all your stuff, watch all your videos, fantastic, love it all like that. And I'm like, where did that one come from? So what's the process of that? I mean, you say you sit down and you put some time into, okay, I'll watch Mr. Bean. What's the actual process? Do you say, right, I need to produce 10 videos over the course of the next month, okay? Those 10 videos, okay, I'm going to have a theme and I'm going to focus on that. Or is it literally popping stuff out of the air?
Yeah, popping stuff out of the air.
Really?
Yeah. And for me, it's like a situation will happen to me. Like, let me give you an example. So yesterday I went to a hot pot. All right. And for some reason, they gave me a bit, they give you a bib in a hot pot.
Yeah.
But for now, they've given me this sleeve that, you know, it's like an arm sleeve that you put on either arm that can protect your shirt when you go in for a hot pot. So I'm like, okay, like I've got a
bib. No hands on it. It just goes over
here. Yeah, it just goes over here. So you can reach over because your shirt or something might dunk into the sauce or something. So I've got a bib. And then I sat there, I was like sitting with like my kids. And I'm like, I wonder what's next. And then I'm like, oh, hold on. What if we created a video where they just keep adding stuff? Like, you know, a hair net. And you know, they love it because you've been in this situation where you get... So for me, it's like, I right there, I put it in a voice note, send it to the team, and then I'll get there and write it. And the reason I do that, and I write it in the moment, like I put it down in the moment, because for me, when you see an idea, take it. When you see an idea, write it down, get it, capture it. And there are days, and I'm sure you'll know this as a creator, but you're in the zone. You're thinking about topics, ideas, stay there. Whenever I'm feeling that, I'm in that zone, airplane mode, phones away, and I'm there. And it might be a day where I come up with 20 ideas. I'm just zoned. Like, he'll be like, whoa, what's going on? He'll get script after script after script. I stay there because I don't know if that's going to be there tomorrow. And like, again, but like, I'll show up, but it might be an idea. It might be a half-ass idea. It might be a, you know, it might be a good idea. It might be a great idea, but I know I'm going to show up. But those days that you're flowing, it's like when you're, like I talk about the basketball, when you've got the hot hand, they keep giving you the basket because you're shooting, you're getting them in.
Yeah.
So if I'm there in that zone, keep going. So there have been times where I've forgotten to eat. Like I'll be starts writing at 11 and then I'll look at it again and be like 8. Locked in. So for me, like again, I believe that number one, grabbing ideas from wherever, way of life, seeing things, being very observant of like funny situations and, being very observant of situations, but also you know, when I'm in that zone, staying there for as long as I can.
Talk to me about the balance between producing content and producing content for money. Because in the early days, everyone produces content, they don't get anywhere. And then eventually by luck or by judgment, there's kind of like a carrot that's dangled. There's something that's dangled. It's like, I'll pay you $50 if you promote my XYZ. And you're like, $50, that means I'm now, okay, I've got value in what I do. And I remember the first time that happened for me with sponsors on the podcast, a sponsor contacted us. The bank said to us, would you produce a 1-minute reel for us, please? And I was like, yes, I would.
In fact, that would be a fine thing to do
if I can fit it into
my you're busy now.
And I work with many banks, so send the price.
you got to
I gave them a price to do this piece of content. I said, yes, it would be this much money, 1-minute rule. I said, I'm going to need to walk into one of the branches while I film, so my cameraman will come with me, this is what we'll do. And then they're like, brilliant, fine, thanks, no problem at all. And I was like,
oh,
now should I have said more?
Yeah, do it every time.
I just said, I thought that was a lot of money. It's nothing for them. Anyway, I'm at a stage where in my business, I have sponsors on the podcast. The podcast is then paid for. I then have, from the podcast, I do business with the people that I have on the podcast.
Yep.
I build relationships with those people. So I have revenue that comes from that. Yours, okay, you've got revenue that comes from all of the social media channels, but you also get a lot of brands that associate themselves with you and they pay you for that privilege. When you get to your level, when or how do you balance it? between producing content for money, okay, and producing content because of the love of the love of the game?
Yep. And so I'm answering your question because you said at this level.
When so I look,
that's the caveat.
Yeah, because you're up there.
Alhamdulillah.
You're not okay. We talked about this earlier on your women's on your talk about being at the peak. You'll never be at the peak. You know,
no.
You reach,
no.
Go to Monaco. You'll never be the richest.
Yeah, exactly.
Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
But it's like, as high as you are, you're not at a place where you're looking for offers. People are coming to you.
Alhamdulillah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that?
So the reason I said there's the caveat to that is because we don't. And let me explain that. It's because whether we're doing paid content or it's not paid content, the product's the same.
Okay.
So the audience's reaction to that content is always at the forefront, even of the paid collaborations that we do. So,
let's take me through this process. Sure. Let's say let's take a big brand. Let's say I'm KFC.
Yeah. Can we not use a controversial brand?
Okay. Let's not use KFC.
Just because there's a lot of,
let's use Bayou because we both know Bayou.
Sure. Let's
okay,
go.
Okay,
so, or no, wait, let's use Property Finder. Oh no, pickle.
Pickle.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Say your pickle.
It's same thing. Let's use pickle. So they come to you and they say, "Hey, Khalid, we'd like you to create some content for us. We've got this product that we're launching. We've got this service we're launching. We'd like to partner with you. Can you tell us what you're prepared to do, how much it's going to cost, and what we can create together? What's the process?"
So in terms of the process, first of all, is we should get an understanding of what it is that they exactly want. Like, do you want just a casual video? Do you want us to come in and do some stories? Is it an event? Do you want a final full-on like comedy sketch that we usually do?
Let's say this.
That's a comedy sketch. So number one is we sort of get an understanding of what kind of a budget that they have, because at the end of the day, like, I'll show up to a video and by the time, before we even start filming, I could be, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 in the hole. Because, you know, we could work with casting agents, production agencies. Like, the product that we want to get is like you're feeling like you're watching a great clip from a movie. That's the end.
Yeah.
So, and we don't negotiate on the idea. So that's a non-negotiable for us.
This is the bit I'm interested in.
That's a non-negotiable for us. It's like, look, we have the platform, we have the audience. You want our audience. You want to market your product to our audience, all right? And I have a responsibility to this audience. And the reason that they engage with us is because of they understand that we put them first. We put their entertainment first, that when they swipe or they get a notification that a Khalid Al Amri production is out there, that they're going to have a smile, that they're going to be entertained, that it's going to make them think about things in a certain way. So that's the non-negotiable. If they're not willing to budge, then we don't want to work with you.
Regardless of the money?
Yeah.
Why? Someone said, hey, $5 million to do this video.
Oh, Spencer, now you're talking about...
I'm just trying to work out because... Does someone in your position, as successful as you've been with this, is there a price where a brand comes to you and says, look, here's $5 million, this is what we want to do. Okay, we want to do it like this. We want to engage your audience. We understand where you're coming from, but this is what we really want because we have our creative people too.
Look, for me at the end of the day, like, if the brand, like, first of all, we don't work with brands that are controversial. That's one non-negotiable. So say that they were a brand that we feel have great values, have got, you know, respect for the audiences. They do good work, no controversy surrounding them. They're well respected in their industry and by the consumers out there. You know, at the end of the day, if they're going to come and give me $5 million for one video on my platform, you know, I've got kids to feed. I've got, you know, people to put through college, you know, I'm willing to do that. But at the end of the day, you know, at least what I used to do before is when I couldn't negotiate on the content, what I would do is if I had to do an ad the way they wanted to do it, I would ensure that we had another video up on the same day, you know, after it, for example. So our branded content would get all the views that it could get, but would also tell our audience, you know, thanks for watching that. Here's a little treat. You know, here's another organic video on that day or the day after. Just, you know, support me on this thing,
yeah,
you know, or on this journey. And don't worry, I'm not going to give up because people could be like, you know, we're going to become an advertising billboard at this point.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, there are budgets that we're willing to work with companies, you know, to sort of be a bit malleable, if you will, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, if it's weird for me if a company wants to come and work with me and somewhat try to change our creative approach, it doesn't make sense to me at all. So for me, 9 times out of 10 that we walk away. Now, if a brand is going to give you stupid money, you know, and they want to throw, and we'll be like, look, this isn't going to work. You know, this isn't going to work. But they're like, look, you know, this is good. Then we're willing to experiment, you know. But at the end of the day, what we value ourselves as is we've walked away for so many deals because they aren't willing to be creative. And we're telling, like, I've said to a CEO of a restaurant came to me. He's like, Khalid, I want you to make a video this way. I want it to be this style. And I want it to reach this market. This is the CEO. I'm like, I'm not your guy. And the guy was absolutely, it's like he got slapped across the face. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm not the guy. Like, I'm not going to take your money.
The question was about your integrity and you just answered it.
And he called us back to work with us on something else.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, because here's the thing, Spencer, they're going to find out at some point. They're going to find out at some point. Like, I could take this guy's check, do the video. Then he's like, hold on, I've got no footfall. No one watched the video. And I got like hardly any ROI on this. You piece of, you know, like,
yeah.
You took my money.
He's got you saying, I told
you. And then he'll be like the others. Now, we have something, like, for example, we have something that's really important. We'll edit the video. And whenever we edit a video for a brand, we'll always say, this is our video. This is what we believe is going to be the best product for our audience. They might come back and say, look, change 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
We have a standard thing where we send a letter. We're like, sign this letter that we, as Khalid Al Amri Production, we are not responsible for the outcome of this video. And if they sign that, do not come to me and say, why didn't it perform? Hey, there you go. We told you. And they usually have like, it's usually creative decisions. And at the end of the day, they're a client. They have the right.
Is the person that's on your videos you?
Yeah. It's too exhausting not to be. Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Do you have a nemesis?
Like in terms of like a person or?
Yeah. A brand, a product, a company, a creator that's safe from that point of view. Is there any nemesis out there?
No, I'm in my own bubble, Spencer. I don't have time for that.
You're not the guy. You don't need someone like the ahead of you that you're like, I'm going to get you.
Nah, the person I was yesterday, that's the only person I want to be better than.
100%, honestly?
100%. I don't have time. I've got a team to take care of to make sure they're happy. I've got my family that I want to give the best life possible. I'm trying to be the best version of myself every day. If I'm thinking about other people and what they're doing and creating imaginary enemies and nemesis, it's just going to take away from my concentration. The only thing I control is who I am and what I do. Period. I can't control what they do. I can't control that. So me having a nemesis doesn't do anything for me. But me looking at myself in the mirror and be like, can I get better today? Am I better than I was yesterday? Then that for me is everything. Are my team happy? Are my kids healthy and well? Am I able to take care of the people that I love? Am I at peace at the end of the day, knowing that I did an honest day's work? Am I happy with the direction that we're going? Am I focused? And for me, that's more important. I don't need an enemy. I don't need a nemesis.
Okay. Every morning I wake up, go to the gym, come back, do my stuff, grab my second shower of the day.
I'm in 6 a.m. in the morning.
You take 2 showers before 6 a.m.
Before the gym.
So
I go to the gym at 5. So shower at 4:30. Go to the gym, come back out of the gym at 6, get home, take a shower. So yeah, weird.
No, it's all good, man. Whatever works for you.
I've always done it that way. But that second shower, when I'm shaving, okay, I then clean my teeth the second time and I have my conversation for the day where I look into the mirror and I look into my pupils and I have a conversation with myself about how the day is going to go. Seems a bit wacky for some people.
I like it.
Okay, but for me, it's my conversation. So what's it going to be like today? Okay, what are you going to whinge about?
Yeah. Get it out.
Yeah, get it out. Yeah. Well, you know, who are you going to blame? All this kind of stuff. Okay. Or is it all on you? Are you going to take full responsibility for today? It's 1, maybe 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conversation deep into my pupils. That's my routine. I do it. People know about it. Do you have any form of unusual habits and routines that you use yourself to keep yourself in a positive frame of mind and to keep yourself focused and looking forward for the day?
So for me, it's mainly about, like, religion is a big part of my life, Spencer, for those who don't know. And for me, like, the 5 daily prayers, being able to center myself, being able to, you know, just remember why I'm here, being able to feel safe that in Allah's protection. You know, for me, that's probably the most important thing in my life. Yeah. And alhamdulillah, just being able to sort of center myself in prayer and get away from the chaos and the noise and everything that's going on. For me, that's probably the most important thing. I think also, you know, just, for me, the end of the day, having gratitude, like, I journal every night. So for me, just writing down the 3 things I'm grateful for, the 1 thing that I want to let go of. So just reminding myself constantly about what it is, you know, alhamdulillah, what I'm grateful for, it keeps me focused. and, you know, just something I want to let go of, because, you know, I do struggle with some things sometimes. Like, life is not perfect. I struggle a lot with, you know, overthinking about things. I struggle a lot with, you know, getting anxious about things. I struggle a lot with imposter syndrome. I struggle a lot with not believing in myself. I struggle a lot with having fear of what I could become and my potential. You know, I struggle a lot with those things. So for me, like, every day I want to let go of something. And, you know, every day there's a different struggle that might pop up at some point in time. So for me, it's just about being able to write that down and be like, you know, I'm going to let go of you today. And yeah, for me, you know, Allah is always at the center of my world, and, you know, journaling to let go of things.
People need to know that you are normal.
Yeah.
They do, though. People need to know someone like you is normal. It's like there's such peace for people when they know that you suffer with some of the challenges they suffer with. They can identify with imposter syndrome. I mean, so many people can. It's just overwhelming for some people, you know. Who am I? I'm not even real, you know. I'm fake, you know. That kind of stuff is like the perception other people have of you versus the perception you have of yourself. So I think that's really kind of that humility in you is really important for people to know about. Let's talk about a subject that you and I know an awful lot about, okay? Just on a slightly different subject. My sister is autistic. You have a family member that's autistic. Your son, we've both grown into a world. My mum has been riddled with guilt for all of her life that she felt she did something wrong when she was pregnant to cause my sister to be autistic. And she's lived with that at now 78 years old. And my sister's in her 50s like me. My childhood was with an autistic sister who had a special needs school that she went to every day. So every day we went to school, she went in one direction and I went in another.
Yeah.
She was different to me. I was bouncy and boisterous and noisy and annoying, and she was calm and intelligent. And in one-to-one conversations, beautiful, but in any more than two or three people, would close down completely. I love her with all my heart, okay, with all my heart. But I grew up feeling like I was alone and I didn't really have a sister. When you think about autism and Asperger's and other forms of these types of conditions, and you see, because you've probably been exposed to other people that suffer this kind of stuff too, do you think there's enough work that's being done to understand it? And do you think there's been enough work being done to try and help people along the way to develop themselves in this country?
In UAE? Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say globally.
It's
like UAE, like, I'm so proud. I really am. You know, I think the scariest thing any parent can ever experience is to be told that their child will not be quote unquote normal. You know, when your child is born, you have these dreams and ambitions for them. You know, they're like 1 year old, and you think you're already thinking, you know, are they going to marry, grandkids? You know, what are they going to do in the future and stuff? And then when you get that report or that, you start to understand that there's something that they need to get. Something's not right.
Mm.
And you get that report or that confirmation from a doctor or a specialist or a therapist that your kid is not going to grow up in a normal way, your dreams shatter. Especially when you don't know. Like, you don't know it. What is autism? What does that mean? Oh, and it's not just, it's a spectrum. We don't know. They could be high functioning, low functioning. So what does that mean? So what do I do? And for me, nothing has made me prouder. And I'm biased. There's so many things to be proud of in this country, and alhamdulillah. But for me, the work that is being done on people and children of determination, unmatched globally. Just the simple fact, like, we know as creators, and you know as a podcaster as well, that words matter. Words matter, Spencer. So to call someone special needs or something like that, or that they need help, you know, it brands someone a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say they are people of determination,
mm-hmm.
they are children of determination, means despite whatever hardships are facing in their life, they're determined to live a life of dignity, of progress, of growth. So just redefining it from the highest level, from our leaders all the way down, has been huge. The investment that's being done in giving opportunities to people with special needs, that fear of my kids' future. Because my biggest fear was not being able to be there for him. Because I knew that as a dad, you know, there might be a big possibility that I'll need to be a part of his life for my whole life. That's a big part. And I was afraid of, like, if anything happened, like, I'm not afraid of anything in this world other than not being there for my kids. So I was always afraid that will someone take care of my kid the way I would? That's a child of determination. Will society treat him in the way that I would? Would society respect him? Would he have the opportunities that I would give him as a dad?
Mm.
And I can hold my hand to my heart and say, in this country, yes, he will be protected. He will be taken care of. He will get opportunities. There will be resources for him. It gives me peace. And for me, I would hope globally that countries will look at what we have done and implement it, because people need, it's not just about giving help. Not everyone wants your help or your pity. Mm-hmm. They want to be given a fair chance and recognized for the unique abilities that each of these people have.
A couple of years ago, something was said on Silicon Valley that I thought was beautiful.
The TV show?
No. In Silicon Valley.
Oh, in Silicon.
About recruitment in Silicon Valley. And the recruitment in Silicon Valley was, we need more people on the spectrum working in Silicon Valley. Their brains are wired slightly differently, which means they bring genius to some of the thoughts that we can't become as normal people. 100%. And that to me was just like, yes, guess what? They're needed now more than the normal people. So right on with that, you know?
100%. I mean, I think a lot, there's a, you know, again, they, I mean, I don't know whether it's just the way their society's shaped, but they're always shaped, at least in that part of the world, about looking at a person and what is the value that they bring. So they will take the time to see, okay, all right, so they have, oh, but they're incredible with numbers. Mm-hmm. All right, so we know exactly how to utilize that.
Yeah.
So they take the time to understand, whereas they don't just say, oh, the this person's on the spectrum. Oh, all right. How much is it going to, it's going to be a bit of a burden. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be, no. Doesn't have to be. You're the one who made it awkward.
Yeah.
You did. You know, you made it awkward. They're just chilling. They're good at something, and we all have our quirks. We all have everything. But for me, Abdullah, my son, has been the biggest blessing in my life, man, because it has taught me, Spencer, to look at the world differently. That, you know, they always say, like, you know, the world is black and white and stuff, but no, they live in a world where, you know, it's just been beautiful to see. You know, just see these little quirks that he has to observe things in a way that I wouldn't observe it. And I think you really get to a place of peace and an understanding in society when you stop trying to conform people of unique abilities, of people of determination, to become normal and part of your cookie cutter approach, but instead saying, hold on, let me take a step back. Let me try and go into their world. And when you do that, you realize how beautiful the world is. So that, for me, has been the greatest blessing of Abdullah.
Khaled, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me today. It's been a long time coming. I'm really
100%. I just want to say something. This has been the best interview. Like, I have, like, Spencer, like, I've seen a lot of your videos, and I want to put this on the video too. You are incredible at what you do. And this has been one of the best interviews I've ever had in my life. Like, this has been like therapy for me. Like, you've just made me think about things in a beautiful way. The way you listened, I feel whole right now, and I feel happy, man. God bless you, and keep doing the work you do, brother.
Thank you, Tim.